Okay, we're back here, beginning the second hour of the Peter Mac Show. Today, it's June 17th, 2007. My special guest is Jim Hoffman. We're discussing the events of 9/11. And Peter from Canada, if you're still on the phone, do you have any last question or comments?
Yeah, has anyone tried to press the individuals who had a hand in the FEMA or the NIST reports to get a definitive answer to explain how the buildings collapsing supposedly from structural failure managed to collapse at free fall speed?
Like so many points that the detractors from the official story have made, there's been very little in the way of the official story promoters, the people in NIST and FEMA, responding to any criticism. I'm not aware that the authors of the FEMA report responded at all. The FEMA report is the first one that came out in 2002. Now, NIST has answered some of the questions. I don't believe that they addressed the rate of fall of the skyscrapers. Rather, they pick and chose a few of the criticisms to respond to, such as spout of molten metal coming out of the South Tower, and they claim that that was aluminum, a claim that was subsequently disproven by Professor Stephen Jones, and they haven't responded to his response to their response. So there's been very little in the way of them responding to the numerous points. I mean, I've made, you know, dozens of points on my website. It's been for years responding to the official story, and they've only taken a few points to even acknowledge. Another one being the so-called squibbed streamers and puffs coming out of the building, and they come up with an explanation for that. But you know, out of a dozen really strong points, they've not really responded to more than two of them.
Okay, Peter.
Yeah,
thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Let's go to Bill in Idaho. Bill, you're on the Peter Mac Show.
Hello. Good morning.
Hello? Good morning. Good afternoon.
Yeah. Good afternoon now, yes. I wanted to thank the Canadian Patriot community more than once. They have demonstrated their sincere fatherly interest in securing and identifying the criminals that have been involved in this enterprise forever. Thank you for your program. I just wanted to ask the guest if they had had an opportunity to review Peter Lant's Triple Cross by chance.
Oh, no, I haven't read Peter Lant's book, Triple Cross, and I'm only a little bit aware of his work. I listened to an interview on Coast to Coast radio program where he was talking about World Trade Center 7, and I thought it was very interesting that he admitted that Building 7 was a controlled demolition, but then tried to decouple that from the implication that led to the idea that the entire operation was an inside job by saying that, oh, Building 7 was damaged and there were state secrets in that building. You know, there were government offices, the FBI and CIA and so forth. And so they took that building down as a way of preventing compromise of the secrets of whatever was in that building. And I just find that very very implausible that they would have Building 7 set up for a controlled demolition and then do that secretly and then not acknowledge it. The rest of the official story, basically Peter Lance was defending the idea that the Twin Towers were spontaneous structural collapses. So I completely disagree with him about that. But no, I don't know what the contents of the book Triple Cross are.
Well, if you get a chance, it would be very revealing, I think, if you got a chance to review his Triple Cross. But the 1,000 Years for Review is a compendium of the Triple Cross discussion. But what should be understood, and the conundrum of Peter Lance adds even more to the...
Okay, going to have to take a break here, Bill. If you want to hold on for one last comment after the break, we'll do that, okay? Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back with Jim Hoffman in a couple minutes.
World War III? Rising fuel prices? Financial collapse? Trucker strike? North American Union? Our world has become a very fragile place, and we need to be prudent and plan ahead. Don't wait for an impending crisis to become reality. Then it will be too late. Stoves and More wants to help give you freedom from the systems of the world. If the grid is down and fossil fuels are not available to you, how would you heat your home, cook your food, and heat your water? People, we need to be more independent and able to take care of ourselves in a natural disaster, political crisis, or financial crisis. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you the independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. With the right application, you'll be able to use these stoves all year long, not just during the winter months. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at stovesandmoreonline.com. Food, water, and a wood cook stove are keys to your survival in a crisis. Take action! In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last year, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, Clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, with no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com, 800-409-5633.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in. My special guest is Jim Hoffman, and we're discussing the events of 9/11. And Bill, if you have a last question or comment, please go ahead with that. We'll move on to the next caller then.
Well, I definitely wanted your guest. It was the discussion in regard to Peter Lance and the Thousand Years for Revenge discussion that it was evident to him that when he did the National Geographic, or he was supposed to be participating in the National Geographic, tell-all of what ultimately he had researched through the years in regard to the FBI and the CIA's involvement in this, that he was COINTELPRO'd right in public. He states in page 465, what ended up running on cable systems across the United States and on television stations internationally was a whitewash of my findings. Worse, the executives at NGC actually allowed Jack Clunan to become the effective voice of the film. They covered up the fact that FBI director for the Eastern Office of New York, Patrick Fitzgerald, had entered into collusion with CIA CIA director Tennant to whitewash the whole thing, and that, in point of fact, the CIA, as well as the FBI, were complicit in the whole entire affair, going back before 1989 by virtue of the fact that Ali Muhammad was never even mentioned but one time only in the whole entire whitewash of the 911 final report. The CIA, the FBI, and other ancillary federal agencies are documented all the way back to Ted Baer's book, CIA Operative in the Field, Early okay. Afghanistan, as being corrupted.
And okay, Bill. Well, let's. I mean, we need to move on.
I want his, okay. your guest to understand is that there's a little bit more going on here. Than
okay.
What
well,
ever...
that, he'll take. He'll look at the book, Peter Lance's book, if he has time. In. Thank you for your call, Bill. Okay, let's go with Gary in Tennessee. Gary, you're on the Peter Mac Show.
Yeah, I've been multitasking. I didn't get the name of your guest, but the
name is Jim Hoffman. Jim Hoffman.
Jim Hoffman?
Correct.
Okay. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
I heard Silverstein. I saw this TV clip on the evening news where they decided, he said, and used the word pull the building. We decided to pull the building, and we're evacuating it. And within, I think it was less than 3 hours, that building came down in a controlled demolition fashion. I mean, it was just like the other ones. But you don't go in there and wire a 47-story building in 3 hours and place the charges
right.
and pull a building. So he stepped in the cow patty right there. And
let Jim comment on that, because I've heard some speculation on the whether the word pull actually is of jargon for controlled demolition. I've heard people say it is, and others say it's not. I don't, Jim, what is your
yeah,
take
yeah.
on
so let me just relate this this event. It was the clip referred to here was played on a documentary that was aired on the 1 year anniversary of the attack called America Rebuilds, a PBS documentary, in which they have this interview with Larry Silverstein, the owner not only of the developer of World Trade Center 7, but also the man whose company acquired the 99-year lease to the entire World Trade Center complex just six weeks before the attack. And anyway, in this clip, he's saying, "Well, we got I got a call from the fire department commander, and we decided that maybe the smartest thing to do was to pull it, and so they made that decision to pull, and we watched the building collapse." And this quote is widely referred to as. Some people saying that, oh, this is proof that he admitted to demolishing the building, and I don't know whether that's true or not. But what I've noticed is that I think that this whole thing has become somewhat of a distraction from the more the very clear physical evidence of the controlled demolition of this building, because it's arguable as to what Silverstein really meant. I mean, did he mean that they? I mean, his office has come out and officially said that, oh, he was referring to pulling the firefighters from the building. Well, it's not clear whether how plausible that is, but whether or not it's true, it's just not clear what he meant. And it's even possible, I think, that this whole thing was a kind of a bait that was set up to just create a storm of controversy around what he meant, and thereby create a distraction from what I consider the much clearer physical evidence of controlled demolition. Because if people are just talking about what he meant by what he said, that's a missed opportunity to point out that, look, this building looks exactly like a classic textbook controlled demolition. So I think this is one of many examples of things that, although they seem like evidence, and maybe they are evidence of something, maybe it could be used in a court as an arguable admission of some kind of complicity in this. I don't think it's nearly as clear as the physical evidence.
Right.
So it's just very interesting, I think. That he said that, and but I don't think it's very clear what it's meant. Like if you actually look at the websites like Controlled Demolition and InkSight, you don't really see the word pull by itself being used to refer to controlled demolition. So that's kind of a matter of opinion as to what he really meant. Who knows?
Right, right. But anything else, Gary?
Yeah, there was also a huge insurance fraud between the New York Port Authority and Giuliani. And Silverstein, and that's the skin on the WTC 1 and 2, had an electrolysis degradation problem, plus the huge amount of asbestos in those buildings. So it was just all too convenient. He just made too much money on the deal in too short a time.
Those are all really good points. The fact that these buildings were in many ways obsolete. They required, you know, millions and even billions of dollars to upgrade to do the asbestos abatement. There's a problem of electrolysis of the aluminum. See, the buildings were clad with aluminum, and then they had the steel underneath, and there was this reaction that was causing a degradation of the connections of this aluminum cladding to the steel work. And gosh, how much would that have cost to fix? And with these buildings just coming down suddenly, it was no longer the problem of the owner of the buildings. I mean, Silverstein had this really, really sweet insurance deal that he assembled just before the attack. As I mentioned, he acquired a 99-year lease to the entire World Trade Center complex just from the Port Authority just weeks before the attack. It closed just I think in July of 2001, and he took out this huge insurance policy that he shopped around to dozens of different underwriters, and then after the attack he immediately turns around and sues the insurance companies for not once the value of the property but twice the value of the property, based on it in the insurance jargon being two occurrences. Well, what does that mean? Two planes hit the buildings, and therefore he claims, pay me twice the value of my policy because I had two events here. It's as if somebody acquired a lease to a expensive house, and then there were two bombs that went off in the house, and the house burned down. And then they sue their insurance company, saying, pay me twice the value of my house because it was destroyed twice. And then he obtained the first overpayment from the insurance companies very quickly, and then there has been this protracted legal battle for the remainder of it, and he's obtained some of the second over payment, and I'm not sure if the matter has been entirely settled yet, but he made out extremely well. You know, basically made about $7 billion and was released from his obligations under the lease. So he is, for a relatively small investment, he made billions of dollars.
Right. Thank you for your call, Gary.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Back to Building 7, and it's interesting, and you've pointed out, obviously, a number of times, Jim, and others have too, is that, you know, as we've said over and over, the evidence appears that Building 7 clearly was a controlled demolition in the classic sense because it collapsed from the bottom up. But obviously, to do that, if someone said, well, there's damage to this building, we need to bring it down, that decision could not have been made that day, because as I think the previous caller to Gary pointed out, I think it was Bill, said, look, you can't go in and wire a building for a controlled demolition in 7 hours.
And yeah, that's extremely implausible. Like, I mean, unless it was some kind of crack military demolition team that was, you know, it was experienced at rapid. It was already familiar with the layout of the building, the columns and everything, and knew how to do that. It just seems extremely implausible. I mean, normally they take months to bring down a building because they have to do a structural assessment of the building. They have to figure out exactly where to put all the cutter charges, and that whole planning process takes months.
Right.
And then just the process of laying the charges usually takes weeks. You know, it's a fairly labor-intensive operation. Now, now that doesn't mean, however, that it was necessarily done in that way, although Building 7 was probably done in a fairly classic manner. In the case of the Twin Towers, one of the reasons that people have a hard time imagining controlled demolitions is they say, how could this building possibly have been rigged with all those tenants in it? You know, I mean, that's had a huge number of perimeter columns. But what I like to point out is the fact that these were not done in exactly the same way as a traditional controlled demolition meant that they actually had more leeway in how they did it, particularly because these buildings were brought down with so much more explosive power than a normal controlled demolition. I mean, a normal controlled demolition, the objective is to use the minimum amount of explosives
right.
to take the building down by strategically placing the explosives. But if you take a building down with maybe 10 times or 100 times the amount of explosive power, you don't have to be as careful about where you put the explosives. If you
let's get back to that in a minute. Sorry to cut you out.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advise others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves & More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves & More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like Grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heating up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves & More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. For the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves & More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Okay, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're discussing the events of 9/11 with Jim Hoffman. And, Jim, I know you were making a point there quickly, but we have another caller waiting. Let's go ahead and take Chad, and then we'll get back to your point and when you're not so rushed with the commercial break coming at us. So, Chad, go ahead. You're on the Peter Mac Show.
Hi, yeah. I just got a comment that I have never really heard before except for one time on a radio show, and that is there's a man named Paul Laffoley, L-A-F-F-O-L-E-Y, and he's a graduate of Brown and Harvard School of Design, and he was hired for the to be part of the design team for the World Trade Center, and he's been on the radio several times saying that it was well known that the buildings were designed and built with explosives in them.
I've heard this claim that the buildings were designed with explosives in them, but I haven't heard of this the person that you mentioned, nor was I aware that he was part of the original design team. Now, it's fairly well known who worked on the buildings, or at least the lead engineers on the building were John Skilling, who's deceased, and Leslie Robertson, who defends the official story, and is often presented as the chief structural engineer, although we know that in fact that was John Skilling. So I would have to look into this this person that you mentioned. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to put that forth, and he's said it many times, but no one seems to pick up on it.
Well, I'm highly skeptical of any claim that the Twin Towers were built with explosives in them. It just seems, well, for one thing, I don't know what the shelf life of explosives is. They would have to be
right.
maintained for all those years, and
right.
just the idea that they would put explosives in a building. What if that secret ever got out? I mean, nobody
right,
would work
exactly.
in those buildings. It
right.
just seems really. I have heard that claim before, but I don't know if that is if the purpose of that claim is to distract from. You know, it's basically a distraction or what?
I don't think it seems that far out. I'm a chemist, and I mean that, you know, if it's wrapped well and sealed from oxygen, it can have almost an infinite shelf life.
Uh-huh.
And I can imagine, you know, I can imagine where it might be a practical idea in case of some kind of impending event where they would not want it to topple and they would want it to come straight down in case of some major fault that was discovered or coming earthquake or some war or, you know.
Well, yeah, possibly.
But who would be privy to that information? Who would
yeah.
be in charge of making that decision to press the button? And how would that have been programmed? I mean, also, the fact that when the buildings actually came down, they started to blow up basically from around the zone where the planes hit. Now, if they had been just rigged with explosives that were designed to bring the buildings straight down in the most controlled manner, why would they come down in the way that looked like it started from right around the zone that the planes hit? I mean, it looks to me like it was engineered to support the official narrative of the official narrative that the buildings collapsed because of the plane crashes and fires.
I mean,
rather than in a way that was designed to bring the buildings down as neatly as possible. Also, they didn't have to blow those buildings up to nearly the extent that they did it if the objective was to bring them down in more of a classic controlled demolition.
No, there was a lot of weight. It's on an area with a lot of water. It's right next to the Hudson River. I mean, they had no way of knowing if, I mean, there probably was some small probability that the ground wouldn't be able to handle such big buildings. I mean, it would seem prudent to have explosives in them in case something started to happen.
I just can't imagine, but blow the buildings up to that level and create this kind of toxic environment and everything.
Right.
I mean, I just can't imagine that even if that were the case, that they would have been destroyed in that manner. I mean, it doesn't look like we pointed out, it's not done in a manner that looks like a classic controlled demolition. It doesn't look like it was designed to keep the buildings from toppling, but it doesn't look like it was designed to bring the buildings down as neatly as possible.
Well, I think they can be programmed to do whatever they want. I mean, each floor, you know, the explosives are individual devices, and it's just you can set them off in any sequence you want after.
Well, I can't disprove that point, but it just seems very implausible for a number of reasons.
I mean, it's not
again having to do with who would have known, how would they have dealt with it if the secret came out. You know, it would have completely destroyed the value of the buildings because no one would have worked in buildings if they knew
right,
that they were
right.
wired to be demolished.
Well, the government does have lots of secrets. I mean, secrets aren't. That's not a implausible. I mean, I don't think just because it's a secret thing doesn't make it dismissible. I mean,
no, not alone. And it is interesting too that the building that these buildings were created by the through the influence of the Rockefellers, and that David Rockefeller basically filled the buildings early on when people didn't want to work in them through his connections to Nelson Rockefeller, who was the governor, and they mostly occupied the building with state employees until eventually they got enough private clients that they were able to occupy the buildings in their later years. So it's interesting to look at the connections to go back and at you know who profited from the destruction of the buildings and the connections between the owner, you know.
Yeah, and I think the people
the owners
that do
were in
profit
things like that. But anyway, that's a highly speculative scenario to say the least.
The people that do profit from these things, I think they do plan these things many years in advance.
Well,
I
don't doubt that either.
I think these
operations. These kind of covert operations are definitely years in the planning and are just planned to the nth degree.
Yeah, I mean, they were only built, what, like 40 years ago?
Yeah, they went up in the early 70s, or they were completed in the early 70s.
Well, we're due for a break here, Chad, but we thank you for your call, and we'll get back to your point about the placement of the charges, Steve, after the break. So stay with us, folks. You're listening to the Peter Mac Show on Republic Broadcasting Network.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the task force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Back to the last half hour of the Peter Mac Show today, June 17, 2007. Again, happy Father's Day. Jim, prior to the break and our discussion with the last caller, Chad, you were talking about the fact that many people point out that if, in fact, the World Trade Centers 1 and 2 were brought down by controlled demolitions, then obviously those charges had to be placed, and how would they get that amount of explosives, you know, into lower Manhattan, much less into the buildings in a way that would bring them down in the fashion that we saw them? And you were speculating on that, and I had to cut you off because of the break. If you could revisit that, that would...
Yeah, so I was pointing out that the case of the Twin Towers, they had several very important differences from what a normal, typical engineer-controlled demolition looks like. So if you've ever seen a typical controlled demolition, or like Building 7, building it's designed to implode the building. That is, they use the minimum amount of explosives placed strategically on basically every single column at ground level and then at several stories up, and set those off in very precise vice order to sever the columns and destroy the interior of the building slightly ahead of the exterior of the building so they get the building to fold in on itself. The building implodes. Mm-hmm. Now, now, it's not correct to say that the destruction of the Twin Towers implodes. Rather, it's correct to say that they exploded. I mean, they exploded outwards with a tremendous amount of energy. They, if you if you look at the – I really want to emphasize to people to actually go to like 9/11 research and look at the video clips of the destruction of these buildings, because if you haven't looked at those since the day of the attack, I think you might have a whole different take when you look at those with fresh eyes, not right in the shock of the moment, but actually look at those events. This mushrooming debris cloud in the North Tower is just radiates out with vast distances. It acquires a diameter of about 1,000 feet by the time it reaches the ground, and so that's completely different from an implosion. It's exploding. Now, what does that mean? It means that the amount of explosive energy that those buildings were subject to was maybe orders of magnitude greater than in a typical controlled demolition. And what that means is that they didn't necessarily have to acquire access to all the columns of the building in the way that's normally required with a controlled demolition. In other words, the fact that they used so much more explosive energy to shred these buildings meant that they didn't have to, they weren't as constrained in how they had to place those explosives. So now let's look at the structure of these buildings and where they might have put these charges in order to accomplish this result. As we described earlier, the buildings had two primary support systems. They had the exterior columns, all those vertical columns that you see on the out running the entire perimeter of the building, 240 columns, and then there were 47 large steel box columns in the interior of the building. Now, in the interior of the building was also called the service core because it had dozens and dozens of elevator shafts running up and down the building. And whereas in order to access the perimeter columns of the buildings, you would have had to traverse the tenant space or perhaps access the buildings from the outside using the window washing equipment or something, that would have been rather conspicuous. Accessing the interior columns of the building or just the interior to place really high explosive charges would not have been very challenging, especially if you had some kind of arrangement with the people who performed the security of the building, which is itself an interesting story because the security for the buildings was performed by Securicom, which is a company with connections to the Bush family. But anyway, it would have been very relatively easy to surreptitiously do operations on the core of the building and place charges there. And given the amount of explosive power that we witnessed destroy these buildings, it looks to me like it would have been entirely plausible that the entire operation could have been executed simply by accessing the core of the buildings.
A
scenario might have involved using access to the elevator shafts, perhaps elevator upgrades. There was an elevator upgrade operation that was going on within the year before the attack. Any of a number of covers could have, stories could have been used to install things in the interior of the building without the tenants having even the slightest awareness of it.
Yeah, that speaks to that aspect of it, but you'd also have to get all those explosives into New York City, and I've been told that would be very difficult. So that all suggests that people at the highest levels were aware of it, because you're not going to just cart in hundreds, if not thousands, of pounds of explosives down the streets of Manhattan without somebody knowing.
It would have to be. It would make it very easy if you were doing it under the cover of some official operation. They were disguised as something else. Everything was authorized by the people in charge of the building security. Clearly, it would have been very hard to do if it by anyone other than insiders who were operating under the with the approval of the people that were in charge of the building security. Certainly.
Right. Well, it also speaks to the point that I raised, in the first hour, and that is about the conversion of the potential energy of the two structures into kinetic energy. And if that is the sole source of the energy, in addition to the relatively small amount of energy of the planes exploding when they made contact, when they struck the buildings, then you have to, how do you explain the, I think you mentioned at some point, 800-foot diameter cloud of debris that's radiating out from buildings, even at a high altitude? I mean, if you simply have the destruction coming about from conversion of potential into kinetic energy, then it seems to me that that radiating cloud ought to be bigger in diameter, many times bigger at the base of the building than at the top. But as I recall, I haven't watched the videos for some time, but as I recall, you have that radiating cloud, and then it just sort of descends pretty uniformly.
Well, it does get bigger as it's descending, but it's remarkable how much spread it has. Like I said, by the time you look at the North Tower, by the time the destruction is halfway down the building, it's already at 800 feet in diameter. It's already two-thirds the diameter that the building is high. It's massively, mm-hmm. it's just shooting out in all directions. And remember, the gravitational energy is a vertical energy. If a building collapsed downward like that, you would get some conversion of that into outward, outward
right.
momentum. But the amount, the degree of that outward explosiveness is just remarkable. And it just doesn't make any sense that gravitational energy could be converted into that level of radiating explosive energy that goes so far out. I mean, it's just remarkable. Right. The fact that there were these sections of the perimeter wall that were stuck in adjacent buildings 400 feet away. I mean, there's the World Financial Center 1 or 3 that has pieces of the outer wall that are jammed into the that are just like projectiles that are embedded in the walls of that building 400 feet up. It's just the amount of explosive energy is just phenomenal.
Right, because that energy is moving at right angles to the energy that's causing the collapse.
That's right.
Right, yeah. Speak, if you would, a little bit about Stephen Jones, and let me just tell the listeners, you can just Google his name, Stephen Jones, and he's a professor, although it says he's a retired professor now, at Brigham Young University, and he, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, got access to some of the molten steel or debris at the found in the bottom of the rubble at the and analyzed that in terms of whether or not that showed an indication of thermate. Is that correct?
Actually, there's a number of different samples that he obtained from different sources. One is the apartment of a friend, Jenna McKinley, who lived in an apartment right across the street from the South Tower, and there was a jet of dust that came into her apartment when the building came down. He mm-hmm. obtained samples of that. He obtained samples from the Clarkston Memorial, and perhaps some other stories. Plus, he's analyzed the data by official agencies that analyzed dust. But there's a whole set of lines of analysis that indicate the use of thermate or thermite, thermate, so-called alumina thermics. These are this is a highly exothermic reaction in which aluminum powder reacts with iron oxide to create intense heat. And thermite is an accelerated form of thermite that has sulfur in it. And there's various other accelerants that Stephen Jones has identified, like barium, for instance, that all of which make this an even more energetic reaction. Thermite will just eat right through steel. It will just slice through steel, and I suspect that there was a large part of the way that it was done was the use of thermite in the core was just used to slice up the core, and that perhaps in combination with other high explosives or thermate itself, if the aluminum powder is fine enough, actually has more of an explosive type of characteristic. It actually does generate high blast pressures plus intense amounts of heat, so that just the heat would create secondary high pressure by vaporizing moisture and so forth. So, so there's numerous lines of evidence that support this idea that there was that thermite was at least one of the techniques used to bring down the buildings, including the fact of all these eyewitness reports of molten metal in pools in the rubble of Ground Zero. Now, the official story supporters haven't really explained this away. I mean, NIST tried saying that there were these intense fires or whatever that caused steel to melt. But I mean, it's very hard to melt steel with any kind of hydrocarbon fire. And but the use of thermite and thermate explains these molten pools of iron or whatever it was very well. Also, there's this very specific event that's on film. It's on ABC. News footage actually shows this spout of orange metal pouring out of the South Tower right before the event. It looks like a welder's arc or something, and you can see a stream of white smoke coming up and a stream of orange metal going down. That is just fits the thermite like a glove, because if you've ever seen the thermite reaction, you have this intense heat and the metals you get an orange metal coming out, just molten iron, and then the aluminum oxide goes off in a plume of white smoke. So it looks exactly like thermite. And so
now when do you observe that in relation to the collapse of the building?
This is just moments before the South Tower starts to come down. It's like it starts within 5 minutes of the total destruction of the South Tower, and certain of the affiliate most of the ABC News network coverage actually zooms right in. The camera actually zooms right in on this event, and you actually see this spout of orange metal pouring out of the northeast corner, the south tower.
At what level? At what floor level?
Right around the crash zone. So I speculate that what happened is when the plane crashed through there, some of the thermite was dislodged from the core of the building and brought out to that corner of it. And then when the actual destruction of the building was initiated, this thermite had started to react, and some of that was in the corner of the building, so it starts to pour out. There's no other explanation that makes sense. NIST tried to say that, that was aluminum that was pouring out of the building, but aluminum does not incandesce let alone with a bright orange color in daylight. Mm-hmm. There's just no way it was aluminum. They make up this ridiculous idea. It's a ridiculous story that it was aluminum, mm-hmm. Molten aluminum mixed with organic materials. Stephen mm-hmm. Jones did experiments that showed that was totally untenable, and they haven't mm-hmm. they haven't come back and tried to counter that. So it's mm-hmm. this is just one of several lines of evidence that shows that I think it was very compelling for the use of thermite. Now, thermite isn't normally used in controlled demolitions, but it would certainly make sense for them to use something that is not normally used in demolition, because it's not something that investigators would tend to look for. They tend to look for, like, residues of nitrates or something like that, something more typical. But if they use thermite, it's not something that they would tend to put together as being an explosive. And it's very interesting, though, that FEMA's report, FEMA, the agency that produced the report mm-hmm. that came out right when Ground Zero had been cleaned up, actually has a whole appendix that talks about these very strange phenomena. They're just scratching their heads and saying, we have no idea what caused this severe corrosion of the steel and, corroded steel away to nothing and like Swiss cheese. The New York Times called it perhaps the deepest mystery of the investigation, this corroded steel there. But it fits perfectly with the use of aluminum thermics.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that struck me is I recall seeing those videos, or not videos, but still pictures of the molten metal down in well into or under the, in the debris at the base of the destruction, of course. And the question I would pose, not knowing anything about, thermite or its destructive ability or anything like that, other than, what I hear from you or Stephen Jones, and that is, how do you get a fire that occurs on the, 80th floor or so, to stay that hot through that collapse of, some 1,000 feet or more? And why isn't the fire dispersed through the collapsing stuff, if that's the only place where the fire occurs, on the 80th floor? How does it stay molten through all that collapse?
How would it get molten to begin with? Because it's completely implausible that you can get just a random hydrocarbon fueled fire to get up to temperatures that would be necessary to melt steel.
Right.
There are hundreds the kinds of temperatures that you can get in any kind of uncontrolled air aspirated fire are hundreds and hundreds of degrees below the melting point of steel. So the idea that it was these random fires, even ones that went on in the rubble pile for however they got started or whatever, for them to be burn hot enough to actually turn steel into, actually melt steel is just,
To turn orange.
Yeah. Is just completely implausible. I mean, blast furnaces are specifically designed to melt steel through a chemical reaction and through containing the heat in these specially designed vessels. And preheating the air that comes into them and all kinds of things. It's extreme.
Right.
It's just completely implausible that random fires would melt steel.
Right. Right. And then you had people pointing out very early on that the fires, while visible for a short time, quickly became invisible, or at least mostly, and then they were followed by this thick black, you know, smoke that was emanating, you know, drifting upwards, obviously. And people said, well, that's indicative of a fire that is oxygen starved. So
yeah,
why?
Yeah, so contrast what happened at the World Trade Center with other fires that were much more intense.
Right.
Now, it is true that the fires in the North Tower actually became more intense over time. That looks to be the case. If you look at the fires in the North Tower after the South Tower comes down, they actually seem to be spreading to some other floors. But if you look at the South Tower, it looks like the fires dwindle over time. Now, recall the plane that hit the South Tower missed the core of the building, and part of the plane popped out the other side of the building, and it
right.
created this huge fireball, probably burned up
right.
half the fuel in the air right there. So
right.
you saw flames in the early part of that event, but by the time the building came down 56 minutes later, you don't see much of any fire on any of the footage from any side of the
right.
building, and the smoke looks to become darker and darker. So it doesn't
right.
look like a hot fire. The fire didn't even spread to the other side of the building. It remained confined to the east side of the building, just
mm-hmm.
to the area around the crash zones, and you didn't see much of any. It'd be hard to find any photographs that show any
mm-hmm.
visible flames from the outside of the building moments before
mm-hmm.
the collapse. Where
mm-hmm.
it contrasts that with other high-rise fires that have burned for hours, even, you know, a whole day. The One Meridian Plaza fire, for instance, went on for 18 hours and gutted eight floors of that building.
Structural collapse. That was where? Which fire?
Meridian Plaza building was in Philadelphia. That was back.
Oh, okay.
But there's other examples, too. There's even several examples of skyscraper fires that have occurred since 9/11, and, of course, those
right.
didn't cause any kind of total structural collapse.
Right. One in Madrid, as I recall.
Yeah, the
right.
Madrid one was really spectacular. Yeah, one
right.
of the days.
Right. We'll discuss that. Okay, folks, we'll be back here in just a minute. If any last-minute calls, call us at 800-313-9443.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering. World War III? Rising fuel prices? Financial collapse? Trucker strike? North American Union? Our world has become a very fragile place, and we need to be prudent and plan ahead. Don't wait for an impending crisis to become reality. Then it will be too late. Stoves and More wants to help give you freedom from the systems of the world. If the grid is down and fossil fuels are not available to you, how would you heat your home, cook your food, and heat your water? People, we need to be more independent and able to take care of ourselves in a natural disaster, political crisis, or financial crisis. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you the independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. With the right application, you'll be able to use these stoves all year long, not just during the winter months. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at stovesandmoreonline.com. Food, water, and a wood cook stove are keys to your survival in a crisis. Take action!
It is through the use of ritual that evil gets power. What do you think those people do at Bohemian Grove? It is ritual. They gather and perform ritual with evil intent. The more vile the ritual, the greater the evil that comes from it. This is done to spread their evil influence and control over our lives. Legend has it that the Knights Templar found the Holy Grail, and it was this that made them so powerful. Can we really believe they found the Holy Grail in their dig at the Temple of Solomon? What they most likely found was the occult knowledge of the greatest magician of all, Solomon. This is what turned the Templars from monks into Masons. We, ordinary people, can use these same principles and empower ourselves to obtain protection and favors. The Bible is loaded with examples of how ritual was used by prophet and angel. Ritual prayer is an effective way of getting results. We can use it to bring positive results to one's family, community, and even nation. For more information and ordering on the book, The Power of Ritual Prayer, go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner. Call 215-500-2972.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. We're down to just a few minutes with my interview with Jim Hoffman as we discuss the events of 9/11. And I want to make sure everybody knows the websites that he's put up where he's just presented an amazing amount of what I think is very, very thorough evidence supporting the claims that, in fact, all three buildings fell through controlled demolitions, although the first two were not your typical conventional controlled demolition. And the first website is 911research.com. WTC7, WTC standing for World Trade Center 7, and then the second website is simply WTC7.net, which, as we pointed out earlier, contains video footage from three angles of the collapse of Building 7. So, Jim, we're down to 5 minutes or less. Any summarizing comments you want to have, or do we want to speculate about who was behind this? I know you are among the researchers are somewhat reluctant to speculate on things because you like to, and I applaud that, and that's why I had you on, like to stick to the facts of what we can actually observe and what we can reason from the evidence that we've observed. So,
well, what I will say is that the analysis that shows that these buildings were subjected to controlled demolition, that these were engineered events, that these mm-hmm. were not possibly natural events, that they were not, that the official story is clearly false, that there's just no way that these could spontaneously come down in this, you know, due to this airplane impacts and structure and fires that could produce this kind of total just shredding mm-hmm. destruction. On that fact alone totally disproves the official story that the attack was the work of Muslim extremists
right.
that attacked us because they hated us. That story is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now I am reluctant to speculate about who is behind it, but certainly we can see that numerous people had a great motive for doing it, that were tremendous financial motives, that all the motives behind the subsequent wars. I mean, the wars are tremendously profitable for certain people.
Sure.
And I would also mention that Don Paul and I was the chief prosecutor in a grand jury event that we held in San Diego about a month ago, and mm-hmm. I was the chief investigator, and Richard Gage was there, Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And uh-huh. we presented evidence for an entire day, and the jury virtually unanimously voted to indict two individuals and provide presentments against about a dozen other individuals. You can go mm-hmm. to the front page of 9/11 Research and read the result of that.
Right.
So I do think it's important to follow the money, follow the motive to where it leads.
Right.
To get to the bottom of this.
Right.
So I think that's extremely important that we look at the really solid evidence that disproves the official story, and also avoid the pitfalls, because I do think it's also important to point out that there's a great deal of nonsensical claims out there that I
right.
think are designed to sidetrack this independent investigation, to mm-hmm. to make it look ludicrous in the eyes of people who haven't really looked into it. Because if people's
right.
first exposure to the idea that 9/11 was an inside job are false claims like that real planes didn't hit the towers, there's just a whole slew of nonsensical claims out there, then they
right.
will very likely write off the whole idea that it was anything other than the official story. They won't take another look.
Right.
They'll just say,
right.
these people are crazy. And that's
right.
the objective of the disinformation that's out there, to create a smokescreen, to create a distraction around this horrible crime and prevent the
right.
crime from ever really being addressed. It's absolutely
right.
essential, though, that we look at the credible evidence that does disprove the official story, and stop what's going on in the name
right.
of this horrible crime, because this is such a key pivotal historical
yeah,
event that's at the root of the attack on it.
Sorry, I had to cut you off.
Done.
I hope you'll come back on sometime, particularly if anything new is revealed in your research, and we'll talk about it again, okay?
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. A message for all homeowners.